Continuing summary of the fourth chapter of Science and Health. Gordon Brown.
So as we read on page 90, line 28-29, we may as well improve our time in solving the mysteries of being through an apprehension of divine principle. It's really where science is again dispelling mystery, as we found it in that previous reference, and explaining all phenomena. And then look what vision opens out when this is so. A new heaven and a new earth. Remember where that comes in Revelation 21 verse 1, doesn't it? That I beheld a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. Now what is symbolized, what is sea the symbol of? Of course, it's the symbol of the mythological, astrological, psychological, unconscious human mind. And that passes away. And in its place, in place of the sea, there is heaven. Instead of earth, which is human consciousness having the sea for its source, heaven is its source. And so heaven, not sea, is the source of earth. And in that case, heaven and earth are one, and of course that is man inseparable from God. And when man is inseparable from God, he is obeying, on line 6, the divine principle, life and love. Divine principle is life and love. And when divine principle is defined in terms of life and love, as it is in this particular context, that is defining the principle of man's inseparability from God. Because there in life we get the true idea of individuality, and in love the true idea of universality, and therefore individuality, being universal, is indivisible. Indivisible from principle. So, man inseparable from God. Line 9. Where it is difficult for the sinner to accept divine science because science exposes his nothingness. Who is the sinner? Well, of course, the sinner is man in belief separated from God, not obeying the divine principle, life and love, and it is specifically on line 10, science which exposes the nothingness, uncovers, exposes the nothingness of that belief, and so as that belief is seen to be nothing, science is accepted. It is accepted in its divinity as divine science. The understanding of the oneness of man and God. Principle, the principle which is life and love, which is science, appearing through what is specifically signified by divine science. And therefore, the nothingness of error is seen, which is, on line 13, the destruction of error. But the destruction of error is by no means the destruction of truth or life. Our next capitalized terms, why is truth indestructible? Because truth is life. And why is error destructible? Because error has no life. But truth, being life, is indestructible. Line 17. This paragraph, starting line 16, is really, as we know from our study of the chapter, really a lead-up to what is coming over on page 92, particularly in the center there with that picture of Adam and Eve and the serpent and all that. Because Adam and Eve there, you see, are absorbed in material selfhood and scarcely reflecting at all the substance of life or mind. Whereas, line 17, 18, the denial of material selfhood, through the denial of material selfhood, we do discern man's spiritual and eternal individuality, that is, his indivisibility from God, from the principle which is life and love. And this destroys the erroneous knowledge gained from matter or through what are termed the five material senses. No, it doesn't say five there, but there are five material senses. And we are immediately asked to consider five, what are called on line 22, erroneous postulates. And the reason we are asked to consider them and the reason why we don't mind considering them is because that in considering them, the spiritual facts of being will be better apprehended. So now we must just consider these erroneous postulates which refer to or relate with the five material senses or knowledge gained from matter instead of course, from mind. That reference to life and mind, man's individuality having its origin in mind, not stemming from matter, or what are termed the five material senses, but from mind, capital M. So the first erroneous postulate of belief is that substance, life, and intelligence are something apart from God, and therefore the spiritual fact there is that substance, life, and intelligence are in fact God. The second erroneous postulate is that in consequence of the first one, man is both mental and material. Well, the spiritual fact there is really that man is neither mental nor material in that sense, but is spiritual. And the third erroneous postulate is that mind is both evil and good. And then this third one actually gives us the spiritual fact, so we don't have to, as it were, turn it to find out what the spiritual fact is, because the real mind cannot be evil, nor the medium of evil, for mind is God. Mind, the medium, only of itself, mind, and nothing else. Then the fourth erroneous postulate is that matter is intelligent and that man has a material body which is part of himself. For matter is not intelligent, but mind is intelligent. Mind is intelligence. And mind has a body, and that body is man. Mrs. Eddy once said that man hasn't really got a body of his own, but that God has a body, and that body is man. So here, as we turn this fourth erroneous postulate to find the spiritual fact behind it, it is that mind's body, the body of mind, that is what man is. And the fifth erroneous postulate is that matter holds in itself the issues of life and death. Well, it is that mind holds in itself, or is, life. And therefore, there is no death and no decomposition of mind's body in what is termed death. See our capitalized terms back on 91, line 16 there, were life and mind. And it's leading up to this. They were leading up to these five erroneous postulates, and that's the fifth one. They seem to culminate in this statement on line 9, and this seems to be the crux of the whole error, that mind is not an entity within the cranium with the power of sinning now and forever. How marvelous, therefore, that what in fact is brain is infinite mind. Infinite mind, not fettered by a cranium, not held or captive inside a cranium, inside a vault, like God being held captive underneath a church dome or something like that. Mind infinitely free, infinite in every way. And that's the truth regarding the mortal concept brain, infinite intelligence, unlimited intelligence. We come to that extraordinary paragraph in the middle of 92, which is about the serpent coiled around the tree of knowledge and speaking to Adam and Eve. He really has hidden the idea in this that she's wanting to convey, or that is conveyed by this picture, this scriptural picture. But we get it when we turn to line 17, where it talks about the common conception of mortal man, an outgrowth of human knowledge or sensuality, a mere offshoot of material sense. Man seeming to come from matter instead of from spirit, on line 16. Extraordinary thing, this serpent coiled around the tree. It's really an electrical symbol is being put before us there, because the serpent coiled around the tree of the knowledge of good and evil presents a symbol in electricity and magnetism of a coil of wire around what is called a bar magnet, with its positive pole and its negative pole, and setting up a magnetic field. Lines of force are supposed to be coming out from the top of the magnet, like the branches of the tree, and lines of force supposed to be coming out from the other end of the magnet, like the roots of the tree. And when this coil of wire, symbolized by the serpent coiled around it, is moved up and down frictionally in this field of magnetic force, then it is that electricity is generated in that coil of wire. And this is what happens when Adam and Eve, in responding to the serpent, are generating mortal man, being as gods, creative gods with a little g, in opposition to God the Creator. Now it is essential, as we come down into the next paragraph, that the fact concerning all this error, namely its nothingness, shall appear. It's a moral demand that this fact shall appear regarding error, namely its nothingness. And what is it that causes, that exposes or uncovers the nothingness of error? We would have to turn back to page 91, to that paragraph starting line 9, where it is that science exposes the nothingness of error. So if you and I were to try to uncover error, as it says on 92:21, it turns the lie upon us. But if we allow science to expose its nothingness or uncover error, then that indeed makes nothing of error. It's really, as we come down to line 28, that the science that exposes the nothingness of error is there seen through the term truth. Truth, the infinite wholeness of truth. Science in its aspect as truth is that which uncovers and exposes the nothingness of error. This beautiful paragraph at the top of 93, bottom of 92, top of 93, where we learn what it's all leading to, this about Adam and Eve and the serpent and so on, is soul. Soul on line one, able to control the body. Soul substantial, able to control the body. The body? What body? Whose body? Soul's body. Soul controlling its own body, which it holds within itself. Jesus proved this. Paul says, line 7, that it isn't a question of waiting for it. Do you say the time has not yet come in which to recognize soul as substantial and able to control the body? On the contrary, the time has come. Paul says, behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. What then is salvation? Salvation is the recognition that soul is substantial and controls the body. That is salvation. Jesus demonstrated it 19 centuries ago, the text says, when he demonstrated the power of spirit, line 3, and said, he that believeth on me, the works that I do, shall he do also. He that believeth, understandeth spirit, then spirit's works are reflected in my works, in your works. In fact, all there is to my works and to your works is spirit's own works. Isn't it lovely to think, therefore, that soul's body, that's man, that's us, soul's own body is the very work of spirit. And therefore, on line 10, divine logic and reason coincide. Divine logic, the Logos and the revelation of the Logos. The Logos itself and the revelation of the Logos are one. Soul and its body are one. The Logos controlling the revelation of itself, just as soul controls its body. Coming down to line 17, where the electricity that is generated in that coil, in that paragraph over on 92, where the serpent is coiled around the tree, destructive electricity is not the offspring of infinite good. What is this infinite good? It is the divine esse, being, esse to be, the divine essence or being. That is the true idea of which electricity is the mythological false concept. And now the paragraph at the bottom of 93, the last paragraph on page 93, because really it is spirit, the flow of holy positive spirit, that is the divine counterfact to the suppositional flow of positive and negative electricity, spirit, holy good, the counterfact to the supposititious good and evil, positive and negative electricity. Spirit, the belief that spirit, line 21, is finite as well as infinite, has darkened all history. Spirit is only infinite. It is not finite. Spirit is only good. It is not good and evil. In Christian Science, spirit, as a proper noun, is the name of the supreme being, capital S, capital B, that is, of the divine esse, being, on line 19. Spirit, the name of the supreme esse, or being. What does this mean? Spirit means both quantity and quality as one, and applies exclusively to God. Whereas the modifying derivatives of the word spirit refer only to quality, not to God. What is a modifying derivative of the word spirit? Well, of course, it is the adjective spiritual. And therefore, man is spiritual. He is, as it were, adjectival. He is purely qualitative and not quantitative. Whereas God is both quantity and quality, but man is quality only. God holds and embraces and expresses himself in terms of man, but God himself is quantity and quality, that spirit, not one without the other, and man is included in that qualitatively only. He is not God, spirit. If man were spirit, then men would be spirits, gods. And of course, that is the false sense of quantity. When you get a number of spirits or gods, but the true understanding of quantity is the one spirit. And if we believe to the contrary, of course, this would becloud our apprehension, on line 31, of the kingdom of heaven and of the reign of harmony in the science of being. So all this understanding of spirit, quantity, quality, and all that we've just been saying, is understanding the science of being. Over to 94, where Jesus taught but one God, one spirit. That's the true concept of quantity. That includes all quality at the same time. Who makes man in the image and likeness of himself, of spirit, not of matter. Man reflects infinite truth, life, and love. We have to now understand that this spirit, which is in itself all quantity and all quality, we have to understand it now in terms of truth, life, and love. Man is the reflection, the qualitative sense of truth, life, and love. And the nature of man thus understood includes all that is implied by the terms image and likeness. When an image is a likeness, then that is reflection. And image reflects the quantitative aspect of spirit, that is, of truth, life, and love, and likeness reflects the qualitative aspect of spirit, that is, of truth, life, and love. See, evidently it must be stated that spirit is, in fact, truth, life, and love, because in stating these three terms, they are not three things. They are simply three aspects of one thing, and so you retain the true idea of quantity rather than the false concept of numerical quantity. Well, all this absolutely incensed the rabbis, and they said, crucify him, crucify him, because by our law he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God. Man is a sinner, and here is his, and Jesus is declaring that man comes forth from spirit, he's the image and likeness of spirit, and so on, and therefore he ought to die because he's made himself the Son of God. But had Jesus made himself the Son of God? Not at all. Jesus taught but one God, one spirit, Spirit who makes man. Man doesn't make himself the Son of God. Spirit makes man in his own image and likeness, and that is the Son of God. And we come down to 94, to the reference to principle on 22, where the one leper returns to acknowledge the divine principle which had healed him, whereas Jesus had, on line 21, healed 10 lepers, but of the 10 lepers whom Jesus healed, but one returned to give, to acknowledge the divine principle which had healed him. See, the false quantitative sense with the 10 yields to the true quantitative sense when it is seen that it is principle at work doing the healing. It's only one that need return to give thanks, because that is the total quantitative sense. That one reflects the quantity and the quality of spirit now seen through the term principle, because it is principle which is being demonstrated through the healing. The bottom of 94, we return to this terrific topic that we haven't dealt with, the text hasn't been dealing with very obviously for quite some pages, but was very, very uppermost some pages ago, that is the reading, thought reading. Our master easily read the thoughts of mankind for the purpose of directing those thoughts aright. All right, on line 28, how did our master read mortal mind? On a scientific basis. What is this scientific basis on which he read mortal mind? The omnipresence of mind itself. But surely the omnipresence of mind with a capital M, if mind with a capital M is omnipresence, where is mortal mind? There isn't such a thing. There is only the omnipresence of mind with a capital M, and therefore mortal mind is simply a misconception of mind and not a thing in addition to mind with a capital M. So that in reading immortal mind, that includes, on a scientific basis, the reading of mortal mind, because there aren't two. Jesus was concerned, therefore, on line 31, with the infinite capacities of this one mind. Not a mind with a capital M and a mortal mind as well. Jesus could injure no one by his mind reading. Top of 95, the effect of his mind was always to heal and to save. Isn't that beautiful? Stated directly that mind with a capital M is his mind. His mind is not mortal. His mind is mind with a capital M. Your and my mind is not mortal, but is mind with a capital M. And this is the only genuine science of reading mortal mind, because the term science there conveys that there aren't two. That what appears as mortal mind is only a mortal misconception of mind, and therefore in reading mind, you are reading mortal mind.